How is the volume? Oh, this is just light.
Hello?
Yes. So, at least some volume is given. Welcome today to our course, Security Management. Today we start, as always, first with the repetition form. You need probably 45 minutes to an hour, and then we will discuss topics. And afterwards, we will have a break and then go into chapter 11, which has contingency planning. Contingency has three different parts. It's incident management, it's incident response, and it's the disaster recovery planning. Incident means when you have an incident, you have to manage the incident, and with disaster recovery planning, you want to recreate the original state of working environment. And with business continuity management, the third pillar, you will have an option that you can continue the business not in the facilities, not at the place where the first was, it's another place. So this is it, what we do today. I have prepared after lunch some video that we can have a more general discussions and to have a little bit while, a little bit different energy. That's not too much at one spot. So I think it should be quite a good day for you. I'm looking forward to it. Please start filling out. Like, this is better, Fabian. Fabian, this is better now. Hi, Fabian. My question is whether it's better now, the quality. Okay, so when I do this in front of the mouse, it's better. Hmm? quite a job today. Were you successful to a certain part? Yes. So it was good, a good supplement, or was it like double twice the same? Both. That's good. You know, I make the umbrella that should cover like everything, and I think Patrick and so on goes much more in depth, or I would expect to show you how it really works and how you implement these on systems and so on. And this is like the overview that everybody has the same. I don't know whether Patrick's lecture is mandatory for any track. Yeah, okay. So probably we should coordinate on this a little bit. Yeah, then let's discuss what is InfoSec framework and InfoSec blueprint. What is a framework? Actually, a framework is often more a list of topics which should be covered in a blueprint and a recommendation, but it's generalized, and the InfoSec blueprint is what you do in an enterprise. You translate this for an enterprise purpose. And this is why information security officers are paid that good, because they translate it. Who and how might an organization create a security blueprint? Who is it? Typically the information security officer or his management team. And how they create it? By reflecting on the security frameworks, sorting out which topics he wants to cover in his enterprise, and usually by discussion with the departments to find solutions which are acceptable at this point in time. How might an InfoSec professional use a security model? I think as a reference in best case, it will lead to a certification that you covered everything. This is like a certificate that he has done the job well. Is it advisable to make certification? I think certification is quite expensive. And it's not really a lot done. We have studied how many corporations in Switzerland, of around 3,000 corporations, are certified. It's 42. I think in Norway it's probably same picture, because certification is expensive, and amongst these 42 are quite a lot of information security service provider which do it for the sake of proof that they know it. Explain the term risk analysis. Yeah, feature risk or threat. Actually, risk analysis primary oriented that you find out what could happen and make a list of this, and then when you have all these threat and vulnerabilities, then you can charge them with likelihood and with others. Is it still not good, Fabienne? Let me make a test, Fabian. Is now okay, what is said by the students, yes, now I understand. Okay. So what you said before? Which question we were? Yes. An outlined plan, how a security framework should be how a blueprint should look and how it should be implemented. This is a framework, yes. So I have to repeat when you say something. Thanks for remote students telling me this. So we were with risk analysis, now we are with risk assessment. What is the difference between risk analysis and risk assessment? I think probably risk assessment is more how you rate likelihood and potential damage. And then you have these risks, and then with the risk assessment you have the significance of risk, and then you can go into the risk management process. And what is the risk management process? You create graphs as you did in your case study, and then it shows which risks are critical, and then you can manage the critical risk, which means that you identify measures against the critical risk, and the measures are usually eliminate the risk, mitigate the risk, make lower impact, ensure the risk or accept the risk. Four or five options. And why I'm asking all this? Because we come to the next point, information security management system. What is now the risk management and the information security management system? Information security management system administers everything which is done in risk management and observes it, how good it is implemented, and it manages all the controls which were results of the risk management. Why is an IT and an information inventory important for the information security? So why you make an inventory first? If you do not have an inventory, it could get some surprises, yes. could have forgotten some components. And actually, to be honest, do you know what you own at your home? Not really. I think when it gets really to 100% coverage, it's very difficult. And to create the inventory is the first step. The second step is to identify which part of the inventory are critical and the other part just forget. So if you lose your cinema ticket for the next day, it's sad, but it's not critical for your life. Might be in some cases when just a new relationship starts, but this is exceptional. What is a control? Yeah, it's a measure taken in place in terms of information security to mitigate or eliminate risks. Explain the difference between information security management and security incident management. How do those two terms relate to each other? Yeah. Yeah. So how you respond to a risk when it's real, when the incident happened. And information security management has a broader scope, and security incident management is part of information security management. Information security management, as most people know it from you, it's a lot is about controls before the incident happens. And incident is during and after the incident has happened. Usually you have an entity which has business continuity management, disaster recovery management, and incident management. And these are either strongly related to the security officer or on behalf of the security officer. As you will see in the next chapter, it's meant that often the chief information security officer leads those. So access control, obviously you have it easy. What is access control? Just we make it quick. Yeah. So it's between individuals and resources, and you determine who has the right to access those. Just I repeat for the offline students. What is the difference between physical logical system and data access control? So data, physical access control, logical access control, system access control, and data access control. What is the difference? So data access control we have defined. System access control, what is this? This is a login to a specific system, and depending on the system you have rights or you don't have rights at all when you start. Both is possible. And logical access control is everything in IT system it might be it might be data access control, it might be functional access control, that you have specific functions you can access. It might be that's a combination of those two. So there are many different ones. And physical access control. No. It's about access control to rooms. And now, just to give a brief impression what physical access control means. First is to the site access. So if you have several buildings as NTN room here, there is often a fence around it and an entry point, and you can have access to the site. Second is to the building. And in the building often there is first the visitor zone, and then you have like the normal internal employee zone. After the internal employee zone, you might have restricted areas. And in the restricted areas, you might have, again, a more restricted area for the data center. So usually you have 3 to 4 zones, and it has to be well thought of where those zones are. What is a must prerequisite for IT access control? That you have electronic identities. This sounds very simple, but I was in two workshops, totally 3 days in the last week, and it was all about access control. About identity. Identity is so important and so essential. Whenever you go out of your computer, which has a kind of also a physical or a system protection, it's very difficult to get the right amount of IDs. What are the attributes of IDs and so on. What are the essential processes of access control? Yeah, this is correct. It's identification, who is the actor, authentication, that you can access the system, authorization for the resources, which are programs, which are data, and then there is accountability or traceability, that you have traces who was acting, that you can make post-incident analysis. What are the key principles on which access control is founded? These privileges need to know and separation of duties, or I wrote also need to know and need to restrict, so there are several correct answers. What is the relevance of trust setting access control? This is now the real one. Not in the textbook. Trust is the essential prerequisite that you can give authorization or even login. So somebody you don't trust, better don't give a login. User ID, password, electronic identity, whatever. And the trust has something to do with how you estimate and how you perceive people. And some are working in term papers on this issue. and you will see that this is not very much reflected. Personnel Security Chapter 11 is dealing with this topic. Explain the term clearance and the principle behind. Who knows? Not really. Okay, clearance is mostly a national process to elect people to be cleared for accessing different kind of secret, confidential or information. The principle behind is that you look, was this guy criminal before? Police register? Is this guy easy to bring in a difficult situation? Because he has financial troubles or relationship troubles or something like that. Identify at least two approaches used to categorize access control methodology. Because you did this also with Patrick, I just say it. Discretionary access control and non-discretionary access control, which is, for instance, role-based access control. It's on management, operational, and technical level, like the different level, which categorize access control principles, and then is list on page 327, deterrent, detective, etc., all of this. Explain the following access control principles. You are in the book, mandatory access control has a list of trust level and a list of secrecy level of data, and you need at least a certain secrecy level for a certain secrecy level. You need an according trust level. Discretionary access control is that the user owns the data and can tell who has access to the data. Role-based access control means that you have specific organizational roles, like an accountant, like somebody in the bookkeeping, somebody in the engineering, and associate with this role, you have access control. It makes it more efficient to administer access control system. And Bella Padula has the principle, read down is possible, the general can read everything, but write and write-up is possible, but no read-up is possible, and no write-down is possible. Write-down is prohibited, that information cannot leak. What is a data classification model? Yeah, it specifies the clearance level to get access to a specific classification, but also the data classification model means that all information should be classified, even if it's unclassified. And here again, when you do this classification, it's a lot of work. Imagine you have to classify all files in your computer. I think you take 2 weeks off, and probably you are afterwards not finished. So it's a very difficult process. And this is rule-driven. And the classification of the data is not depending on the clearance level. The clearance level is separate. This is only personal related. And then the match of the levels is one prerequisite that you can access the data, but usually the more secret information is, the smaller the bucket of persons who has access. at the end it's only 5-10 person which can access specific data. The next topic is on models and frameworks. And as said, it's more important to have the background of those frameworks, that you can position them and know a little bit what is regulated in. What is ISO 27000 series? Where it's coming from and what is regulated. It comes from the British standard 7799, was then turned into the ISO standard 17799, and then to the ISO 27000 series. At the start, it was a security officer finding together a common denominator of what is a good security practice. COBIT is coming from the audit, and the audit is the financial audit, and it was primarily directed to the financial IT systems that they don't cheat on taxes, but it has all controls necessary to make a secure system. Checklist based. NIST is the standard of the US government and is a series of many, many standards, as you learn to know. And I think it's a good source to have a cross-reflection when you use more the European standard ISO 27000 to see what is an alternate model. GOSO is an internal risk control where you install in the company internal risk control, and especially also in general, but then it has some consequences on IT. And common criteria provides a certification of devices that you can say this device is evaluated according to common criteria. As said before, on the low level it's no statement. On the higher level, it's very expensive and time-consuming, level 4 and more. And it was coming from TCSEC to ITSEC and then common criteria, and today also an ISO standard 15408. Question 19, I was asking more that you get a little bit engaged with the American standards and know a little bit what you can look after. And it was foreseen in the book that you know this as a question. The special publication 800/12 is Computer Security Handbook. The 14th standard is General Accepted Principles and Practices for Securing IT System. So more concrete on larger IT systems. Then 53 is Assessing Security and Privacy Controls in Federal Information Systems and Organizations. And 53 has appendix building effective plans. So obviously at the beginning, at start, it was more a menu what you can do, and then effectiveness was more in the 53A standard. And this -30 standards is guide for conducting risk assessment. And to explain the difference between ISO 27001 and 27002, 27001 is a list of potential controls. and 27002 is the information security management system. So 27001 describes what you should do when you make a system secure, and 27002 describes how you administer all controls and all parties in the corporation to keep the corporation secure and have an overview on what's going on. Typically, there are several 10,000 elements in an IT system, and each of these has several controls, so we speak about an asset or about items of 100,000 to millions in larger enterprises. And that you cannot do this by hand is obvious. This is too complicated. Then we came to the principle of benchmarking. Explain the term internal benchmarking. This is the comparison of information security efforts to previous period. So you make an initial one. I already explained this next question. Baseline, it's the baselining is the initial measurement for a future comparison. So when you made baselining, then you can say in future we did improve, we lowered the security, whatever. And it's a quality system approach. When you improve it, always finally it turns to high level. This is the philosophy. External benchmarking is that you compare the system against other companies referable from the same sector and against industry standards. Internal audit is the place where you check whether everything is running fine in the company, primarily the financial books, but also other issues in the IT system today are also in internal audit, and often they are also the ones which make the initial request when people are screened and when they have interrogations and so on. External audit is from the board of the company. The board is representing the shareholders. Initiated review of the security or of the financial systems. Penetration test is just a special form of audits. Meanwhile, general audits are more process-oriented. Penetration tests are target-oriented. Is it possible to break the system? And penetration testers are hackers with the task gotten from the company itself. And penetration testers are heavily monitored. And they have a contract where each step is defined what they are allowed to do. So they have not the mandate to turn off the system and then, yes, I did it, and the company has a big problem. No, this is a step-by-step procedure. And quite a good lawyer topic to make those contracts. Performance measure in the context of information security management. This may indicate the effectiveness of security measures, controls on all three levels, managerial, operational and technical. System accreditation and certification. Accreditation is the the national body who says that the certification process is clean and could be applied, and then you can use when you are accredited, you can do the certification whether the controls or the frameworks is implemented correctly. Explain the terms standard due care. What is standard due care? Yeah. So it's a minimum set you do to be legally compliant, and then you can defend yourself in front of court. Due diligence, pretty much the same goal, but a little bit stronger, a little bit on higher level. Baseline. What is the baseline? If it's related to baselining, it's the initial measurement for future comparison. If the baseline as baseline controls meant, it's what you have to do to be in the legal interpretation waterproof. Like baseline means often, baseline security means that you do what one has to do to be secure in court. Pretty much the same, but one is more the European name, and the other is more the American name. So baseline security is what everyone does. Recommended security practice. It's a superior level of performance and protection of data and IT systems. And best practice is best of industry, selected best standard of industry. So in Norway, when you want to know what is best of industry, which companies you would talk. Best of industry in Norway. Probably Telenor, Statoil, EMB, the large companies which has money and invested and did everything good. The next two questions I didn't do. What is a gold standard in InfoSec practices? Has anybody done it? Not okay. Then we skip those and recommended practices. The criteria we can read in the book. And 25. When choosing recommended practice, what limitation should be kept in mind? It's financial and personnel constraints. So even when you have recommended practices, often you can do not everything at once. And baselining and the benchmarking. Baseline and baselining is not the same. Baselining is an initial measure, a reference, And the benchmarking is periodic measures and compared with the baselining measures you had at the beginning. 27, what are the NIST recommended documents that support the process of baselining? It's the special publication 800-14, general accepted principles and practices for securing IT systems. Why is performance and measurement a delicate company issue? Was not that much discussed in the book, but I put this question because I think it has a real big relevance. Whenever you talk about performance and measurement, it's a lot about internal politics. So why you should, as a chief information security officer, you should be measured against what you are doing when you have like 20 items you have proposed and were not done, and then showing in the performance measurement that you failed there. And then first you are blamed, and then you have to show, I have the file here, look, this is where you said no to this control, and then first is the security office blamed, then he has to show in a very difficult process that actually it was not himself. Then what types of measures are used for InfoSec management measurement program? Has anybody of you an answer? I have pretty much the same as in 32. What are the critical success for sector of an information security performance program? But probably I was not 100% aligned in this question here. It's top strong upper layer management support. It's practical information security policies and procedures. Then quantifiable parameters and result-oriented strategy for measures that the continuous improvement process can be launched. So this and 32 is for me pretty much similar. Then the seven potential metrics for awareness measurement. So you can have various areas in questionnaires. You can try with social engineering. You can measure hit rates on security web pages with advices. You can have incident metrics. You can have an evaluation how audit points are dealt with. You may have an incentive program where you can look how many incentives you can give, and you can also look whether lessons identified are implemented. According to Gerald Kovacic, what are the critical questions to be kept in mind when developing a measurement program? What will it cost? Is it working? And when it's not working, why controls do not work? For instance, I make an awareness program, and then I look how much misbehavior is there, and still a lot of misbehavior, but much better than before. And then why doesn't it work? Because we are all human. We are all engaged and then forget. What factors are critical to the success of an information security performance program assay the same as 29. What is a performance target and how is it used in establishing a measurement program? It's either monitoring targets of recommended practices. Then it's a moving target sometimes. A measurement to detect success of a security program and 100% success or 100% target versus relative effectiveness must be understood and must be considered. List and describe the fields found in properly and fully defined performance measures. This is like the security cockpit you have on page 385 or in the slide. Let's go to page 385 quickly. Yeah, in the new book, 385. This is the security dashboard where you have security cost percentage of revenue. So how much is invested, then server compliance, desktop compliance, network incidents, background checks, business conduct, disaster recovery, percentage processes with the testing plan, and then this is like an overview for the top management. I think this is also quite the next question. Describe the recommended processes for development of information security management program and recommended processes. This is the figure 9.1, which is a couple page before on 377, where you have goals and objectives. No, the first one is probably the most important one. The stakeholders' interest that you have a measurement program. Without a buy-in of the stakeholder, it doesn't make sense. If they don't want to know and you provide the data, it's a failure before. If they want to know, then you define goal and objective. You make an information security policy and guidelines, procedures for that. Then information system security program implementation, you check on that. Level of the implementation. Program results and business mission impact you assess, and then you turn this around in several cycles until you have the right measurements that you can make a good statement. Why is a simple list of measurement data usually insufficient when reporting InfoSec measurements? To whom you report? To the top management. You have like an idea how secure your corporation is and what's there. And it's not readable when you have a simple list. There is no interpretation. And top management cannot act on how many DDoS attack you have, how many port scan you had, how many whatever. This is no reaction. You need to condense this in a reasonable form. And this dashboard on figure 9.1 is a reasonable form. Then a question out of the book, the capability maturity model integrated, and in which organization is responsible for the development. The target of this is process improvement, designed specifically to interpret organizational processes improvement across disciplines. Not only in information security, but in more disciplines. And there are several levels of maturity, and the theory is that you have to follow from level 1 to level 5, one level after the other, you cannot jump over specific levels. And the issuing organization is Carnegie Mellon Institute. And then we have two more questions up to the break. Explain as many attributes as possible of the performance measurement entity C379380. And then you see that this table is performance measurement template and instructions. And you have measurement ID, goal, measurement, measurement type, formula, target, implementation evidence, and so on. And then you have performance measurement example in table 9.3. So a potential question is when I give some fields that you explain a little bit the fields or something like that. And tiered, not types, tiered risk management approach, so the three-tier pyramid, the upper level of the is organization and governance, then you have mission business procedure, and then you have on the third layer information system and operation, and this model is on page, let me see, this pyramid that you can remember it, on figure 9-4, here the risk management approach is from strategic risk to tactical risk, and it's on page 387. As you, when I go through in the first year, of course, also for me, it's a little bit a challenge, and it gives another reflection layer to just read or reflect, oh, I have to look for information. It's necessary that we have first overview, but then I think it's also necessary that we have some reflection, and these are like two different point of view to look on the same, and this is actually what we call learning. Repetition, I started a little bit at the wrong point, and then I made some questions, and I gave you this one here of chapter 7, which is not mine, just because I have done it, but there is no relevance at the moment for this. It's more what Gotha and Dana is giving you in this, and they do also the exam question in their part. Are any questions to the repetition? Ah, it's exhausting. Yes, it is, I know. But it's part of the learning process to reflect, to look afterwards, and I think that the whole set of questions is probably also too much for the exam, but I don't know how to advise you to learn at the moment. I have to make my mind a little bit, and we will speak for sure in the last lecture, because this is quite heavy. We have two more lectures on 14th of November and on 28th of November. And 28th is the last lecture where we do some theory more, and then we'll have a session about examination. And the exam will be on December 14th. For me, December 7th, I have to provide all exam questions to the exam office, so this is how it works. And it's a 2-hour exam. I didn't want the 4-hour exam because you do term paper, so 50% of the exam is taken away. And this is why we do it in this manner. Good. Let's check time at this point in time. Oh, we were working hard. Hmm? What about when we continue 10:30? Like 20 minutes? 10:30.
Good.
Yes, okay. I think we can restart. And planning for contingency. Contingency, what does it mean for us? A little bit a difficult term. Actually, it's any irregularity of operating in an IT system is called contingency. No reason, no arguments why. It's just it doesn't continue. And this approach to not ask why is, and to consider all together is also called all hazard approach. So, you know, when you are going in a crisis and you speak about counter-terror and then you say because of Islamists we do, then it gets very tricky and political, and sometimes you have also political scenarios which are not very well perceived and probably also forbidden to not talk about. And an all hazard approach takes this away. We assume this is not functioning. Why? Don't ask us. Then this is a good thing. And contingency is all of those. So contingency plan has components: incident response, disaster recovery, and business continuity. So we have all contingency planning. And then from the contingency planning, we have several components. Here, the first one is incident response. Reacting on an incident to make it directly, and the incident can be now more severe or less severe. Like if a cigarette is put in this trash and there is a little fire, we put a little water about it and everything is gone. No big incident response. Probably a fire alarm is, and then the rescue forces are here as well to just be secure that nothing happens. But then are bigger incidents, and when bigger incidents are coming and you have in time somewhere here the incident, then you have like the goal to reach normal operation again, as it was here. And you have two things. Probably there was something coming from Earth falling down on this building. And then you have to rebuild the building. This is one. This is what we would call disaster recovery. And on the other hand, of disaster recovery, we have the building not available a certain time, and we need an alternate option, and the alternate option is the BCM, business continuity management. This means we have prepared to go somewhere else to do our business, and all the resources are available, the whole IT system is available, we still can work. And during this time, we are off-site and working on another place. This is business continuity management. The proof of the pudding is eating. This is a like a recent words of in English, and it means you have the ultimate test whether something is working. And I would like to show you on 9/11 days. 9/11, you remember, two houses, two jets in two houses, and three houses were imploding. The third one, nobody knows why. Like two is obvious, but the third one still an unanswered question. But anyway, those houses went down, and all businesses, of course, had a disaster. The houses are partly not rebuilt, so disaster recovery doesn't work completely, or is an alternate option. But business continuity means they had a prepared plan. Only very few people were insured, so you can continue with the workforce. If you have prepared materials on the other side and work until you have a new facility. Two totally different objectives. And then components of crisis management and business resumption. Business resumption is both BCM and DRB, business continuity management, disaster recovery management, discuss how the organization would prepare and execute the test of contingency plans. So last lecture we had to go out. You remember? This was a test, an example, test in the wrong lecture. Business resumption means both the incident and the disaster recovery. And in small companies, this is coming pretty much together because it's not that difficult and that separatable as in a large company. Explain how the organization manages investigation. So we are focusing now in this chapter on different topics. First we go on the contingency planning, and then we will have all in detail. An organization's ability to weather loss caused by an unexpected event depends on proper planning and execution, without which an unexpected event can cause severe damage to an organization's information resource assets from which it may never recover. How many companies which didn't have a business continuity management of the Twin Tower are today still in business? Zero is the right answer. Zero. You don't survive this. Period. No option. According to Hartford's insurance companies, over 40% of the business that don't have a disaster plan go out of business after major loss. Yeah. I think there are many motivations to go in this direction. A little bit contingency planning, I think everybody does. And when you go on travel, you have probably also a contingency plan. Like me, I travel from here and on other places. What is the quick check whether you are in trouble or on travel? Money, credit card, passport, tickets. If you have this, anything else you can rebuy. And for me especially, the laptop and my files and so on is critical. The main goal of CP, contingency planning, is to restore normal mode of operation with minimum cost and disruption to normal business activities after an unexpected adverse event. Yes, so minimum cost, minimum time elapsed, until you have normal operation again. I think this is very important. The four components, you see this here on the board, incident response plan. So how you make the incident not spreading out more. Incident plans can be very difficult when you make a wrong decision. In the Swiss railway system, one line had not sufficient power. And the manager tried to generate the power to not have an outage on this line. And they turned down the whole Swiss railway network for 3 hours. Because once everything goes down one after the other, because there was not sufficient. If they would have isolated this part, they could recover after half an hour. This was the investigation afterwards. So the strategy of isolation and impact minimization is very important. Several same things can be. This is the incident response plan. What you do, how you do isolate, how you make limit the loss to the least possible potential. Then disaster recovery and business continuity, I explained already good. Business impact analysis, why you do business impact analysis. When you have to set priorities in the business continuity management situation is for sure something you have to do for the important things which could harm the company and not think about details like whether there is sufficient paper in the printer and things like this, depending of course on the business. This is given by the business impact analysis. I said before also in risk management, business impact analysis is the measure CISO are thinking of risk. If I have a risk, but it has no impact, it's no risk for me. This is today. Depending on the organization size and business philosophy, IT and InfoSec manager can either create and develop this four CPU component as one unified plan or create four different modules for each one. Both is feasible, an integrated plan with all four aspects or a set of interlocking procedures that enable continuity. If you are four separate documents, then of course you have some impact from one on the other. And when you see through the chapter, the topics are pretty much similar, but with another background. Then the question is, when we have such plan, we need such plan, who is doing it? And there are quite a different type of people involved in it, the one which plan it, the one which test it, and the one which execute it. But how we start with the process? As in most processes in management, it starts with a policy statement. What is the target? Policy, target. Think of target. Target setting, high-level target setting from governance level, this is policy statement. The formal policy provides authority and guidance necessary to develop an effective contingency plan. How they assess that the effective is something. And then BIA, business impact analysis, and of course you have suggestions from framework, which areas you have to control for business impact. And then identify preventive controls, so this is before the incident, to reduce effect of an incident, to and disruption and to increase availability and don't transfer anything down. So this is preventive. This is what we can do before the incident happens. So here we can take preventive measures, and depending on the preventive measures, the incident is more severe or less severe. Then create contingency strategy, thorough recovery strategy, and ensure that the system may be recovered quickly and effectively. So, and then develop the plan. The contingency plan should contain detailed guidance and procedures for restoring damaged organization and facilities unique to the to each business unit's impact level and recovery requirement. So it's not all sites. If NTNU loses a building here, for Alesund and Trondheim, no difference. They can even take all our students in their facilities, as it would still work. So it's on site specific, and it's also business specific. But then step six is very important. Once you have a plan, you have implemented it, you have the contractual work, you have the handbook, and everybody knows what to do. A plan without testing is no plan. Ensure plan testing, training, and exercising. Testing validates recovery capacity, whereas training prepares recovery personnel for plan activation and exercising the plan identifies planning gaps. Combined, the activities improve plan effectiveness and overall organization preparedness. So whenever you make a backup, probably it's wise to randomly select three files and play them back. In our university, over 2 years, our IT department head made backups. And he was never restoring a file. And when I asked to restore a file, he couldn't do it. He didn't tell me at this time. Much later, I experienced that he was using the novel directory structure backup instead of data directory, data backup, and he has backed up only the directory structure, no content at all, over 2 years. Very interesting. And today, of course, we know more. This was early days, like early 1990s. Today we know more about those things. And we know also that's critical how long a backup takes. If you have a server at home and you want to make a backup over wireless, or you want to make a full backup over 100 megabit Ethernet, I think this doesn't work really overnight. You need several days for this. So this is also something you could recognize such incident. Ensure plan maintenance. The plan should be a living document that is updated regularly to remain current with system enhancement and organizational changes. So what is the innovation rate of IT systems? How fast IT systems innovate? Or what is the usual time a server is in operation? How long you use your laptops? 5 years. You are very good. Who has less than 5 years? So you have still the laptop at bachelor start. Yeah, almost, not really. Yeah, so you are very good. But 5 years is very good if you can manage this. If you have a really advanced model, you can make 5 years, 6 years, but the average time is probably 3 years. 3 years for desktop computing. I had one computer I could have for 6 years. I was very happy with, but it was just no more working hardware-wise in the failure. It would be still good, and the following model was not better. So, but we are discussing this because of the update. So you have an average innovation of 3 years. So 50% new equipment after 1.5 years. If the plan is 1.5 years and you have the list to reorder, and half of the components you cannot buy anymore, so this means revision. That's why maintenance is so important. Then what are the components of such a plan? Introduction is statement of philosophical perspective by senior management. As always, especially in US, but I think also in Europe, it's good to have the buy-in of the senior management. Here probably it's not the top level management which has to sign it, but still a reasonable high. A statement of scope and purpose of the contingency planning. A call for periodic risk assessment and BI by the contingency planning management team. This is the contingency planning management team. What type of people are these, the contingency planning management team? Are these technicians? No. Are these top managers? No, it's something in between. But they don't go into technical details. They are more with the target setting, scope, and purpose. Description of major components of the contingency plan and the call for and guidance in the selection of recovery options and business continuity strategies. Then continued. A requirement to test the various plans on a regular basis. So I think evacuation here is trained once a year. An identification of key regulation and standards that impact contingency planning and a brief overview of their relevance. Identification of key individual responsibilities for contingency planning operations. What is the turnover on personnel in an enterprise? Typical turnover figures. How many new employees per year you have typically in an enterprise? An important figure to know. Yeah. But it's lowest is 5, up to 15%. If it's more, it's very odd. Something is odd, except if you are fast growing. Like enterprises which double the size, of course, you have 50% new people. But 15%, 2 years, you have 30% new people. If they are assigned to critical operations, contingency planning, we have a problem. Revise the plan. An appeal for support to the individual members of the organization and additional administrative information. Of course, this is always something. Then, individuals and teams involved into contingency planning. So, we have the contingency planning management team, including a champion. The champion is probably in the executive board of the company and aligns with the task and say, I'm one which promotes this. I stand behind this plan. I want this plan, and I give visibility whenever necessary. Then the project manager, also pretty much at high level, and he coordinates the project on a high level and has probably an acting project manager. And then the team's members, which are business manager, information technology manager, and information security manager. All managers. No employees. No one which configures a firewall. No one which does network configuration. But their managers are in. Then people from delegates from the incident response team to understand the incident, to react on the incident. First hand, then disaster recovery team member and business continuity team member. These are delegates which are in this team. The business impact analysis is the first phase of the contingency plan. I think we have this already. This one of the fundamental differences between BIO and risk management is the risk management focus on identifying threats, vulnerabilities, and attacks to determine which controls can protect the information. And BIA assumes that these controls have been bypassed, have failed, or have otherwise proved ineffectiveness, that the attack is succeeded, and that adversary that was being defended against has become diffusion. So it's not that we believe that all measures in place are effective when we are doing business impact analysis. Also, not effective measures can be tested here. Here we have like the components of the contingency plan, business impact analysis, then incident response, disaster recovery planning, business continuity planning, and in small enterprises this is called business resumption planning. Those two are together. I think we already discussed this sufficiently. Then the major task in contingency planning, and I apologize, this is again a chapter with a lot of lists, and we have to deal with this, that this list we cannot completely understand and learn by heart. From the contingency planning team, we develop the policy, then conduct the business impact analysis, and you see this is in three step goals. Determination of business mission processes and recovery criticality, identify resources requirements, identify recovery priorities for system resources. So, like, nice to have system, of course, are not recovered at the same speed as the mission critical systems. So whatever you outsource is in business continuity management, everything which a company needs to make the profit and to secure the existence. Form subordinate planning teams. So it's not about doing, it's still about planning. Plan is not done from the one which do it. Incident response, disaster recovery, business continuity. And then develop subordinate policies, integrate the business impact, identify preventive control, organize those teams, create strategies for response, develop subordinate plan, ensure plan testing, ensure plan maintenance. So here again you have this three steps are like pretty much similar to those three steps, but a little bit different, and the subordinate plans are now created. When we have done this, the job is done. Now the question is how we do it and what is important when we do it. And this will be guide us through. This is impact analysis because this is related to risk management. I don't want to go too much into detail. Scope of the plan itself, balance, the different interests of costs, of effectiveness, of need, know the objective and follow up on the plan. 800-35 is recommended. Conduct the BI in three stages: determination, mission, business process, and recovery criticality. Identify resource requirement, identify recovery priorities. Resource requirements, this is coming from the business impact analysis, which resources has to be re-established, and then when these are re-established, should be re-established, so business continuity management, you have a couple options. You have the option to buy this newly, but then you have prepared list. You have already suppliers which have committed that they can deliver within 24 hours the system, that you can rebuild it, or you have like a hot site, you can go on this hot site, or you can have a buy-in that you have a company which has like office room left and you can go there. These are options how you can go for the system resources, but at the end you should have everything. Determination, mission, business process, and recovery criticality. First step again, business impact analysis. Then each business department, unit, or division must be independently evaluated to determine how important its functions are to the organization as a whole. So if it's not important, like strategic planning in the or security in a business continuity scenario has no relevance, then it's about doing the operation. A weighted analysis table, weighted factor analysis can be useful in resolving the issue of what business function is most critical. So this is a discussion part. You know, it reads easy. We make a table, give some weights, but the weights are heavily discussed in the organization. And then you are at the table and discussing with people what is the priority. Is this really what we need that it's still functioning? One useful tool in identifying and collecting information about business function are the analysis for the analysis the business impact questionnaire. Yes. Then there are a couple of objectives which are in the plan, and think of high level. I have a company running. I need the company running again. What are the critical times? It's the recovery time objective, the maximum time amount of time that the system resource can remain unavailable. Then the recovery point objective. This is like what the last backup was made. Then maximum tolerable downtime. Maximum tolerable downtime has to do something with survival capability. Typically, banks and airlines have very tight plan. What do you think is of a bank or of an airline a typical elapsed time until they go out of business. How many days, how many weeks? Who risk an estimate? So, DNB, how many days, how many months they can be out of business? Yes? Yes, but by not reacting on customer requests, for instance, a lot of issued if you want to trade stocks and so on. And in banks, it's 3 to 6 hours. In airline, it's even less that they go out of business. But for sure, both industries have less than a day. Not available in the market is out of the market. Just that you get the sense of severeness. So we are discussing here about those times. That maximum tolerable downtime is measured in how long you can be out of business without dying in the market. And the airline industry after 9/11, they stopped airline in America and without subsidies and support of national government, they would be out of business, all American airlines. Work recovery time, the amount of effort expressed as elapsed time that is necessary to get the business function operational after the technology element is recovered. And here you have the plan, which is more storytelling on page 20. The last backup recovery point, how far back, how long to recover, and here you have the recovery time, how soon restoration and recovery, and here is the incident. And this recovery time should be in a way that you are before you are going out of business. This is the criticality. As said, in many industries, it's less than a day. And disaster, the strike is here. Backup recovery or recovery point, this is more when you do your recovery point on your PC. For businesses, it's a little bit different. Businesses do it differently because they have online mirroring, hot backup, hot standby, whenever they need. So you how far back you can afford it. It depends on how much money you lose, and then you adopt your IT system in other configuration. Here are the times. Last backup. This is from last recovery point. Then return to operation. The system recovered. Then the data recovered. And then you have testing and validation and complete resumption of operation, normal operation. And here we have WRT and MTD, and these are maximum tolerable downtime and work recovery time. So work recovery time, this is to recover the whole system, and then maximum, this was maximum tolerable downtime here from the loss of the system until you are fully operational again. And out of this thinking, how long I can be out of business, the maximum downtime is given, and the maximum downtime is then describing whether you should have a second side, whether you can have an external backup, how you do your structure and so on. And the decision, I have one friend which did it to create a second data center. Just one here, one there, they are apart. It's costing an enormous amount of money. And this is not that you explain, this is our maximum downtime, and then you can do it. This is a long process, and you needed more than a year to take this decision and then to start building it. And until it was built, it was like 3-4 years, because there is a lot of concrete, a lot of stories, everything. This, I want that you reflect this, chart here. Cost balancing. Cost to recover, the longer the length of disruption time is, the cheaper it will be. And cost of disruption, how much that costs downtime, the longer it takes, the more expensive it is. And somewhere you have an optimum. Cost balance point. What do you think about these curves? Looks reasonable. I think cost to recover, if you have a second size site, it's somewhere here. And then if you don't have a second site, you have probably contact, and it's here. And if you can make a rebuild, then it's on this level, but these are just steps. So this is not that reasonable. And cost of disruption, depending on business, is evolving completely different. So it's schematic to make us reflect. But I have seen so many optimal cost point graphs, and always they look the same, with these smooth curves. So it should be reflected, this chart. Information asset prioritization. Priorities means you are the one which we want to be fast, operational again, the ones which can be longer. So it's a result of the business impact analysis, priorities. So we need to understand the assets. The process is present on these assets, the value of the information asset, and the inverse of the valuation of particular business processes. By the way, how long you think when you have a tape to restore all data, how long does it take in a larger data center? Take days until you have a full backup reinstalled. Also because of data rate. And there are different concepts on such backups. One of the concepts is that you do it online. But online, when you have a gigabit remotely or 10 gigabit, it's already a lot. But then you have to have the equipment to store that fast, and it's very limited. You cannot make terabyte by terabytes. Very limited. And often it's easier to fly in tapes and to reload tapes, but then it's like a day, 2-3 days to restore data. Normally, this task would be performed as part of the risk assessment function with the risk management process, the assessment of the high values. And the organization should identify, classify, and prioritize its information assets, placing classification labels on each collection or repository of information in order to better understand its value, to prioritize its protection.
Yes, sounds very clever. Let's make it a little bit more real.
How important is classification? How important is privacy when you have a disaster like this? Who was asking in the Twin Tower incident,
whether his privacy is violated?
I don't care at all.
So this is very theoretical. Probably there are some collections who really matter, but this is a very, very minor part. And let's take it, store it, and try to run the system again to launch the business. Then the second step, identify recovery requirements. Prioritize list of mission business processes. It needs to determine what resources would be required in order to recover those processes. For each process, identify the previous BIH, business impact analysis stage. The organization should identify and describe the relevant resources needed to provide the support of the process, and use a simplified method for organization. This information is put into the resource component table. And this is the table here, resource component. I think to understand this, we can make an example or two out of this table. Provide support, customer support. There is the help desk. What the help desk needs is application server, Linux, Apache servers, SQL database, and then it's the description field. Provide customer billing. This is probably more critical. Customize account receivable applications. And application is a Linux OS, Apache server, SQL database, such that the billing process can run. When the billing process is not running, somewhere you are short on money in the company. And those tables, resource component tables, are very long in the book. You can read through those. But to understand that at the end, it's a list work to do this and to do this carefully, and a lot of reflection in planning time. In execution time, you just take it and do whatever is in the recipe. Then identify recovery priorities for system resources. Again, it starts with the business impact analysis. Then you have the weighted table. And in addition to the weighted tables, describe earlier a simple valuation classification scale such as primary, secondary, tertiary, or critical, very important routine. So the bucket is not given by fine-grained scale, it's just very, very pragmatic. Primary, secondary, tertiary, or critical, very important. Just this, like in damage, high damage, mid damage, low damage, as you did in your PC case study. Then contingency management policies. This is again target setting, the initial phase. Outlining this chapter, the CP team should work to develop the policy environment that will enable the BIA process, business impact analysis process, and should provide specific policy guidance towards authorizing the creation of each of the planning components. Authorizing. What means authorizing? Why authorizing? Whenever you decide in an emergency to go on a second side and have rent the building, rent the room, this has enormous financial consequences. And if those
have to be negotiated and reflected in the board, too much time elapses. If you have a second site and you have to go there and transfer the business, and you have renting costs or agreement that you can run on a similar IT environment, it's extremely costly. If this would go through a normal authorization process, forget about it. It must be pre-decided. In case a level 3 incident we have, you can execute the plan without any questioning anymore, because there is no reason to question it. No time to question it. Yeah, there is some classification. It's just an example. I don't know whether it's level 1, 2, 3, 4, or whatever the classification they need. But it's easy, understandable that you have a minor incident, and like a harmful incident, and an incident, and a major incident, and an extreme incident, like the Twin Towers. This is the classification. And then you assign which level for your company is the incident, and then based on this you have a pre-authorization. If you are, you need to change the firewall or the configuration of the services because you are attacked, and you want the formal authorization that you can change the firewall in a business, probably takes days or weeks until you have switched off a service. But if it's critical that the rest of the company can still operate, that you are attacked on specific ports, and you just say, forget this application, but then the rest of the company can still run, then you can save the company. But this needs a decision that in case that such an incident is here, you are pre-authorized. Just try to give you some examples, because these lists are not really readable, I know. So these policies provide guidance to structure of the subordinate teams and philosophy. So the structure you still have in mind, it's the structure on we have here of the subordinate team incident response, disaster recovery and business continuity. On page slide 13, we go back to 23, I think we were. And just as the enterprise InfoSec policy defines the InfoSec role and responsibilities for the entire enterprise, each of the contingency planning documents is based on a specific policy that defines the related role responsibility for that element of the overall contingency planning environment within the organization. So it must be very good explained, very specific, and therefore the sentences are very difficult to understand. But I would like to highlight another aspect. When you have three teams, business continuity, an incident response, and disaster recovery, it would be wise to care that people are available if all of those three teams are working. And how many people you need to guarantee that the function is really there when you need it. So you have one intrusion manager as a role and responsibility. You need an intrusion manager. How to guarantee that one is there? Not two. That one is on maternity leave, the other is in vacation, and the third on a conference. this is like a critical process in a large enterprise, when which person can be absent and which person is in which team. Incident response, I'm using some of my slides here. The major incidents, if you just realign about what we are talking. Remember Charlie Hebdo? The guys which went in and January 7th, it's nearly 2 years, and killed nearly the whole editorial team. Such aspects are coming, and I think we are faced that they are coming in a higher density than they were before. Here a resume. February, Carbonac was published. $1 billion from Hunter Bank in 30 countries were stolen. Remember Carbonac? Who remembers? A network published in February. April was TV Saint-Mont. 11 channels in 200 countries out for 24 hours. With Islamic State advertising. So the station were down and then Islamic State advertising.
Heavy.
Who was it? Of course not Islamic State, because it's always the goal to blame someone else. We have strong indication that the Russian did it to show the capabilities they have, that they can use it as a negotiation tool to make the pressure and so on. May, an IT security expert stated that he has penetrated an airplane's cable system and took over control of the airplane during flight. Just over the normal entertainment system. June, in USA, 25 million files of federal administration, including fingerprint, has been stolen. So 21 million files of employees which were security weighted, including fingerprint and biometrics indication, were stolen. July hacker demonstrated how they could take control of a cheap car. So cars are also object to be takeover. August, German Bundestag is fighting against Russian malware in their ICT system. Consequence, they renewed the whole ICT system and they renewed the whole security concept. Very serious. September, Ashley Madison, fake female provider reported by August 27, 2015. This is of course a very nice thing to publish. So Ashley Madison reported that they can find sex partner on their portal, but actually of 400,000 females, only a few percent were real and the rest were fake profiles. And the company, of course, went out of business. Massive increase of ransomware, cryptolocker, and DDoS. December, Ukraine suffers 10 days power outage because of hacked SCADA system. And this shows that the density of such incidents is more and more. This is why we do things like that. And the question is, whether this one here you can protect against. Can you protect against everything? I think it's a little bit difficult. Here you see development of cyber damage. Germany has reported in 2011 0.5 5% of the gross product. Then in 2014, 1.6. If it increases in the same manner, it would be 5% of the GDP in 2017.
Just to give you a little bit thinking,
I think we cannot afford this. And what happened? Everybody, every country is exploding their security efforts. What means exploding? They need people. Where to get the people? No country has sufficient security engineers who can master the challenge. Similar figures are in other countries, and here Computer Security Institute 2014 reported damages. Germany, Netherlands, United States, China, Shanghai, Norway is here with 0.3%. But is this real 0.3% in Norway? What was the anticipated value of the Ulstein group loss of blueprints of the boat? Zero. Then you come down to 0.3 if you estimate like this. There was in October 18 published that India is asking for $14 million Ulstein group. The stock went down. I wanted to recatch the Wall Street Journal article about this. Didn't find it anymore. Wanted to see the stock price of Ulstein Group, didn't find it anymore. I don't know, I want to go to the bank to check it, whether they still are in stock or whether they just omitted the stock price negotiation. When you make a calculation like this, of course you come down. Why is Germany so high? Because they are aware. Netherlands is also very aware. United States has another single point, and China, they are information dominant, and they spend a whole lot of money. United States spent last year $9 billion on information security research, this year $13 billion, next year $17 billion. Compared to $5.3 billion they spend on operational cyber forces. So they invest three times more in research than in cyber forces. And what we have new, protect, but detect and response. This is what we're talking about. That whenever you have a protection, you should look whether you aren't anyway catched, and then whether you have a response. And the response is what we call here contingency planning. And here a little bit of how could it be in the future? Does this exponentially grow for the next period? Goes it in a stabilization or is it collapse? The most likely scenario. At the moment, the hacking side is growing exponentially. How we can stabilize this with measures, it's unclear, but for sure incident response contingency is extremely important. And an early answer here, that we have all three scenarios together, exponential, stabilization and collapse. Like the exponential is smart city, internet of things, mobility, tablets, bandwidth exploding with 3D printing and 3D video, social media, and IPv6 is growing. IPv4 will be collapsing somewhere. As soon as sufficient IPv6 is in the market, IPv4 will be no more prevalent. And stabilization, PC, laptop, notebook, this is a technology. If everybody has one, it doesn't increase anymore that relevant. I was asking whether cyber losses are real.
We had from ENISA a meeting with top-ranking people, and in this meeting we discussed a couple of things, and then I was asking whether the indication given by these figures here, by this percentage of GDP, whether they are real. And Luigi Ribuffi and Udo Helmbrecht. Udo Helmbrecht is director of ENISA, Europe Network Security Agency. And Luigi Ribuffi, we discussed together. This would be about a dramatic change compared to natural growth in our cybersecurity. So we are calling for almost 90 recommendations to increase the cybersecurity in Europe and support development of EU solutions. Some of these are very urgent investments. We are starting now lobbying within EC, European Parliament, European Commission, European Parliament, and Member States to convince that this should be done. Our message is not necessarily that of reducing cyber threat costs, as politicians are not very sensitive to this, I'm sorry. They have getting used to that as far older form of crime. Our urgent message is that Europe has to defend its data for its economy and citizens. They are much more sensitive to this message, which goes in the same sense as reducing cyber attacks. So, and question whether they are real, these figures, they said they are conservative estimation. So the real losses, people show. When you talk about your future, I think if there is no collapse of the whole IT infrastructure, you have a good future when you are selecting this topic. Qui bono is for whom it serves if you have such incidents. In case of US Sony case, Sony Picture case, November 2014, 2 years ago, 75% of the corporate server are down. Ask here an enterprise, do you think it's likely that 75% of your server are down? Anybody would say, are you crazy? Are you crazy to ask such a question? And of course they attributed before they had forensic evidence, because qui bono, they said the motivation is clear. It was Kim Jong-un from North Korea. And what are the motivation? Military or political, business, steal information, financial, steal money, advertising, terrorism, grudging, self-assertion, hall of fame, and fame. Lawyers use, these are major attackers. And what we learned so far, we had a couple critical stories like Stuxnet. The critical infrastructure is very important. Mobile devices are spreading out and are less secure. Internet of Everything and SCADA is coming. Privacy 2.0 is going to include completely new level. And Internet is going to be 20-year-olds and adults. However, there are little adult security response. So we can use as professional and on purpose Internet, but the security controls in most of the Internet is way below of maturity. And the new situation is we had ABC, atomic, biological and chemical weapon, and the new weapon is the Ishku weapon. We see it in the movie in the early afternoon. Just to have a little recovery of my 133 slides, that you are not confronted always with this text, to make a little extra. Incident response plan, we are now convinced we need it. It's not something out of the textbook, it's really. It's an organization set of planning, preparation efforts for detecting reaction to
recovering from incident. And incidents respond with planning team or response planning IRP consists of the action taken by senior manager to develop and implement the incident response policy plan, the incident response plan and computer security incident response team called CERT or CERT in most companies. The incident response plan is a document product of incident response planning. So incident response planning leads to the document incident response plan. A plan that shows the organization intent effort, planned effort on events on an incident. So
when an incident is here, the incident plan should be executed, and you have no time to think about and to organize yourself. You just react. This is the incident response plan. Also, this pre-authorization.
Adverse event, an event with negative consequences that could be treated to the organization's information asset or operation. Sometimes referred as to as a candidate. And the incident is the real incident, an adverse event that could result in a loss of information asset that does not threaten the viability of the entire organization. This is a normal incident.
Then getting started. An early task for contingency planning management team is to form a computer security response team, CERT. This is CERT, often they name it CERT, like KraftCERT. Margaret Rames is working there, she was studying here like you some years ago.
An incident response of technical IT, manager IT and internet profession who are prepared to detect, react and recover from an incident. And complete an incident. Key members of the CERT become the incident response planning committee and began work by developing policies to define the operation of the team to articulate the organization response to various types of incidents and to advise end users on how to contribute to the effective response of the organization. So they are everything around computer incidents, information system incidents, they are organizing.
Marie Meur worked for a while in CERT and she will give next time, November 14, from 2 to 4 in the afternoon, a lecture to have a preview on the specific topic. Here we are in general information security management, and she gives on the incident response, hot cases and so on, a preview next time, and then you can take the elective. She's doing the elective with me together. I'm doing the organizational and human aspect, how you work effectively in an organization, how you create impact and so on, and she's doing the other part and we share this together.
Missed incidents response life cycle, preparation, detection, as said, detect response, detection file, and analysis, containment, eradication and recovery. Containment first. Whenever something is, don't let it spread out. And then eradication, to make the source ineffective, and then recovery, and then post-incident activities, analysis, reports, and so on. And you come back to post-incident activities, actually a preparation activity for the next time.
Now, again, a list. Sorry for that.
But let's take serious incident response policy. Missed Special Provocation 800 for Helping 61. The Computer Security Incident Handling Guide identifies the following key components for a typical incident response policy. Statement of Management, this is always in any policy. High-level management, purpose and objectives, scope of the policy, definition of the information security incident and related items, then the organizational structure and definition of roles, responsibilities and level of authority. This is now more specific. So organizational structure in the in case of incidents is not the same as normal. You have a new structure, a new command structure, definition of the roles, responsibilities, what they are, what they can decide, and the levels of authority. Prioritization of server ratings, severity ratings of incidents, and this is, like I said, level 1 to 5 or whatever they make these severity ratings. Performance measure and reporting and contact form. When it's threat becomes a valid adverse event, it is classified as an information security incident. If for this what deserves to be called an incident, it is directed against information assets, it is a realistic chance of success, it threatens the confidentiality, integrity or availability of information assets. So then it's a real attack. It just ports can an attack or an incident, according to this definition. Which point? A realistic chance of success that you know which ports are open. Doesn't qualify. At which point DDoS would qualify? Yeah. Against information assets. It's more on availability. A realistic chance of success. I'd say yes. It is important to understand incident response as a reactive measure, not a preventive one. So preventive because could come up that you plan, you prevent more impact. So you reduce the impact by a plan, but it's still reactive. It's just in place after the incident. Otherwise it doesn't make any sense. It's not it's reducing the impact. Usually up from a certain severity level, they report up to the CISO. I mean, you know, when you would report any port scan, doesn't make sense. Everything below a certain level is like in the monthly report. And then is the one, the CISO is informed, okay, we have something, but he's not immediately active. And then he's the one, he gets a call and get out of the meeting and starts working. And then it has a certain severity level. And when he takes the phone and goes into the car, then you know it's here. This is probably a good description. So, who is creating the incident response plan? The CISO or an IT manager, the security responsibility is creating it. Using the multi-step contingency planning process discussed in previous chapters, and for every incident scenario, the contingency planning team creates three sets of incident handling procedures. During the incident, this is incident response, after the incident, and before the incident. So for each scenario, before the incident, plan for it. During the incident, how you react immediately. After the incident, is BCM, is DRP involved? And now we have during, after, and past the incident. During, when is the ROP document, the procedure that must be performed during the incident. These procedures are grouped and assigned to various roles. And the planning committee drafts a set of function-specific procedures. Function, so you have probably a malware, a firewall, an intrusion specialist, and then each one of these has a different role. This is during the incident. And during the incident, it's also very important that fast first reports can be communicated, because when an incident is coming up to reality, it's very clear that in this case the public wants to have information. After the incident, it's procedures about what planner should do immediately after the incident has happened. And separate functional areas may develop different procedures, again, for those different profiles in the computer. And before the incidents, the third set must be performed in advance of an incident, and these are details of data backup schedules, disaster recovery preparation, training schedule, testing plan, copies of service agreement, business continuity plan. And as I said, testing plans are very, very industry specific, like banks in Switzerland. They have really coming somebody taking the plug and looking whether the swap to the second side is immediately, because they go out of business. And the bank going out of business, what does it mean for a country? It's just one company less? No, every one of you have a bank account in a large scale bank. There is a topic too big to fail. The national government has to finance them, therefore they have the right to regulate them. And to ask that they are robust and train this, because the population doesn't pay tax money for keeping them in business. Here a schematic view on those tables before the attack, after that, during the attack, all the users and technology services and so on. You can read this table in the book. Incident response planning needs a detailed understanding of everything, of information systems, threats, all this. And incident response planning team seeks to develop predefined responses that guide users steps needed to respond to an incident. So how good you can plan for a predefined response? What do you think? You know, you can test certain scenarios. And then is the question whether you can simulate the reality. And always when an incident happens, it is something which was never trained before. And here we have like two different sets of methodologies, because we are here in university, we can also call this report by name. There is one thing which is called what-if analysis. What-if analysis, you build block elements of such plans,
and you have always the question, what is if a plane crashes on this building? What is if an explosion is inside the building? What is if there is a pandemia? Things like this. And those elements are flexible and you can recombine. And the other is a simulation. Of specific incidents, and those are competing. The professor Giorgio Franceschetti, world famous professor, said once to me, "The Italian civil service is now active." Yesterday again. Why they do not simulate? Why they make what if analysis? And I said, this is good industry practice. And he said, but they should simulate. He was quite strict in a large conference of many important people. And then I took this question, went to a couple rescue organizations, and what I found out is that they use a lot often with what if analysis, because what if analysis you can build block, and those blocks you can then puzzle together in case of an incident which are already trained, and you can do together a holistic simulation of a specific incident gives you the answer. If this incident happened, what we can do, but it doesn't help you finally to resolve a slightly different one. So what is better? I think it's a little bit both. So you make for sure what-if scenarios, fine-grained, but on the other hand, you make also simulation games that you assume tabletop or even in real such incidents. Incidents respond planning. Planning requires a detailed understanding of the information system. Response planning teams needs to develop predefined responses that guide users through the steps needed to respond in an incident. And these are described probably better in what if than in simulation. And predefined incident response enables rapid reaction without confusion or wasted time and effort. Rapid reaction means also pre-authorization. And this has a lot to do. I was working in a national government for about 2 years in a large project with the question, what happens legally to the acting people when they use incident response in search? So when you are working in a search, what is your authorization or what is your competence? What you can do, what you can't do? Very difficult question. An example to make it a little bit tasty. There was a case that the root of a botnet was a Windows 95 unpatched system. It was not many years ago, like 2-3 years, of health of a blood-lung machine in the operation. So during the operation, they had to decide whether they stop the computer or whether they accept the DDoS. These are choices. And now, what is the consequences? Are you murder of one, or are you making service available for many? And things like that must be thought before. You must have decisions and what you can do, how you can isolate this. The execution of an incident response plan typically falls in CSERT. CSERT is a subset of the incident response team and is composed of technical and managerial IT infosec professionals prepared to diagnose and respond to incidents.
So CERT, I think most of you know anyway what it is. It's the computer security incident response team. Some organizations, the CERT may simply be a loose or informal association of IT and InfoSec staffers who would be called up if an attack was detected.